The message this morning is titled The Good and Faithful Servant, based on the reading that we just had from Matthew 25. A parable is a story meant to convey or illuminate a truth that is often not immediately understood by the audience or the reader. The Gospel of Matthew chapter 25 verses 14 to 30 is often referred to as the parable of the talents, though some translations call it the parable of the bags of gold. What is Jesus trying to tell us, and how does it relate to legacy? In this story, the master gives three servants some property to manage on his behalf. We are told he gives one servant five talents, another two, and one each, and another one, each according to their ability. When the master returns, he is quite pleased with that two servants took their talents and multiplied them, returning double to the master. However, he is dismayed that the servant who had one talent buried it in the ground. At first read, one might think this parable is about growing your money. And indeed, it is sometimes used at financial planning and wealth management seminars to encourage or justify the building up and accumulation of wealth and possessions. It is easy to understand why. Sometimes people don't think this is about money at all, and focus on the message that people should be industrious, work hard, and to use their God-given talents, skills, and abilities to make a better life for themselves and those around them. And it's easy to understand this reasoning too. Let's look deeper and see what we discover about what Jesus is really talking about. First, we could go through a lot of calculations to convert talents into today's money. To make a long story short, a single talent would be equal to 15 years of earnings for a laborer. So not only is the text talking about money, it's the kind of money that most people would never earn in their lifetime. Think about this for a moment. What if three people here in this morning were given these sums of money? What would you do with it? Would you put it in the stock market, trying to double it? Or buy a home to renovate, flip, and double the original investment? Would you deposit it in the bank? Or we hide it in a coffee can in the freezer, cold cash. The third servant buried his money in the ground, and the master was furious with him. He called him lazy. He scorns him and shunned him for keeping his money safe. I'm not sure why he isn't more sympathetic, more emphatic. I don't know about you, but I'd have been cautious too if I were asked to look after fortune on behalf of somebody else. How else could I guarantee it wouldn't be lost? Sure, I could have put it in the bank, but would the interest really make that much difference? And the master already had lots of resources. Why such a scolding if this parable isn't about financial gain or financial success? There are two other details in the story that can give us clues. First, we are told each servant was given the money according to their abilities. So the master may have known that the first and second servant would take more risk. Perhaps they had entrepreneurial spirits or experience in making money. He might have known that the third servant was more cautious, but that it was possible for him to do something with the money. The servant could have at least invested his talent in the bank. It could earn a little interest. When a servant buried the money in the ground, it is almost as if he was scared to admit or wanted to deny that he had been entrusted with any of the master's goods. He didn't even put it in the bank. The second thing we learn is that the third servant sees the master as a harsh man. Perhaps that is also key. The third servant only saw bad things about the master, and he was fearful. He didn't see the master's abundance of generosity, only judgment and wrath. And so he didn't recognize the generosity of the master or the responsibility the master was giving him, nor the opportunity to share in his joy.
These master's gifts, the five talents, two talents, and even the one talent, were so exaggerated in the ancient world that people would have known that the story had more significance to it than just a lesson about making money. I think the story is about how we use or don't use the resources we've been given to advance God's work in the world. The money in the context of the story symbolizes both a huge amount of potential and God's generosity. Will we be faithful stewards and put the resources God has given us to work helping others? Or will we allow our fear of scarcity, our need for financial security, to overtake us to the point that we deny that God has given us anything? Today, material possessions and money in the bank can make us feel like we are the owners of our own resources. I own my own home, I own my cottage, I own my car, and all my other things. And in our consumer society, with messages like Freedom 55 and Because You're Worth It, we are repeatedly told that we deserve to accumulate wealth. The accumulation of possessions makes us feel safe and secure, and may even provide meaning for our lives. The truth is, building up our wealth and buying more stuff for the sake of it, even if it was earned by our labor, is as good as burying our talents. This parable is about creating a different world. It's about realizing the extravagant generosity and graciousness of God. Remember, like the servants, we are stewards, caretakers of what we've been given. As followers of Jesus Christ, we are called to live out the gospel, not to idly bury our treasures in the ground. We can use our resources and our talents to show people what God is all about, so that they will know God's love. In the end, if we haven't shared our resources and blessings, what good are they? What if we take this parable in the context with the other teachings of Jesus? Will we use our treasures to feed the hungry, clothe the poor, offer shelter, and treat others with the same grace and unearned kindness that God has shown to us? The servants in the parable who grew their talents were not growing them for their own sake. They put their gifts to work and returned to the master more than they'd been given. God provided unimaginable abundance, and the first two servants responded by creatively generating more abundance and returning it to the source. They were given more, and they were invited to enter the joy of their master. The third servant was scared. He didn't see the master as abundant and giving, but as ruthless and taking. He didn't see that the resources were given to him as an opportunity to do the master's work. So how can we be faithful servants? We recognize that God has given us many gifts, time, talent, and money, and also opportunities to do creative things with all we've earned or achieved, according to the values Jesus taught. Loving our neighbor, caring for the marginalized, the vulnerable, the outcasts in our midst, with our skills, our talent, and our money. The parable challenges us to grow our wealth and accumulate possessions for the right reasons. Part of doing God's work and stewarding generosity is being responsible to the people in our lives. We should take care of family, friends, and others we care about. But we should also recognize that there are opportunities to do more. There is enough for all. The legacy of being a faithful servant is also about how we'll be remembered. Whether we have lived an abundant and generous life or one of scarcity and fear. And when our lives are finished, each of us must decide what will happen to our possessions. It is our final chance to act in this life and give us a blessed opportunity. If we don't make decisions about how our estate will be used, the government will make them for us, distributing our assets by a formula that doesn't necessarily represent our values. With good planning, we can look after our families and leave a legacy that puts God's resources to work. Let us share with you stories about Presbyterians who have used their resources while they were alive, as well as in their deaths, to create legacies that continue God's mission.
The raw carrot. Several years ago, George Van Beek gave a gift of stock to the National Church to fund new experimental ministries. George and his wife Evelyn contributed to this fund during their lives and then left generous bequests in their wills. These gifts have been making dreams come true across the denomination. One of these dreams was to change the world one bowl of soup at a time. In 2013, Rebecca Sherbino and Colleen Graham of Paris Presbyterian Church in Ontario dreamed of hiring people on the margins, people on social assistance, people of various abilities and skills, people who experience significant barriers to employment, to make and sell healthy, locally sourced, homemade soups and stews. With support from their congregation and the Presbyterian Church in Canada, Rebecca and Colleen worked to realize their dream. The Raw Carrot Soup Enterprise received financial support from the legacy gifts of generous Presbyterians. By mid-2015, the Raw Carrot was selling about 100 liters of soup per week. If 1 liter of soup feeds about 4 people, then in 2015, this nonprofit social justice-focused outreach ministry fed 20,800 people with 5,200 liters of soup. There are 7 full-time staff who would otherwise not have full-time employment. Through their work, they gain dignity, community, and employment. They are faithfully living out service to Christ, and they make absolutely delicious soup. The Raw Carrot has been so successful that it is expanding with pop-up shops around southwestern Ontario and beyond. George and Evelyn lived out their lives faithfully by using their possessions to do God's work in the world and to leave a legacy. Their gift has multiplied. Their legacy is making dreams happen and changing lives.
We also have an example from close to home. We are all familiar with the song made popular by the Bare Naked Ladies, "If I Had $1 Million," and I won't start singing. But what would you do if you had an extra $1 million? Well, Ron and Muriel Bremner didn't imagine all the things they could buy. While most people here will fondly remember the Bremners, there are probably some newer members that are unaware of their impact on the Presbyterian Church. Well, Ron and Muriel didn't just imagine all the things they could buy. Instead, they imagined all the things they could share. As Muriel often said, and I can hear it in her voice, "We don't need a lot of things. I don't need 30 pairs of shoes." They decided that they would establish a $1 million endowment through the Presbyterian Church in Canada in memory of Ron's parents. And it cost a whole lot less than $1 million to do it. The purpose of the endowment is to provide annual income in perpetuity for emergency needs or emerging opportunities within the church. They did it through an initial donation, which cost a lot less after utilizing tax credits. They also utilized a donor-advised fund, a life insurance policy, plus additional money from their estate. And at all stages, tax deductions were involved, and the whole thing did cost less than $1 million. Most of us are not in the financial position to establish such a fund. But we can use the same strategies that Ron and Muriel used to grow their gift and multiply their generosity. Copies of the longer version of this story can be found in the entryway. Every gift given, no matter how big or how small, is the ability to impact more lives and carry out more of God's mission and ministry in our church and the world than we could ever imagine on our own. Imagine what we can transform our accumulated assets into. We all have more than we think we've been given. We need to use all of our resources prayerfully and wisely. When we put our resources to good use in God's work and don't bury them needlessly, we will surely hear these words from the Master: "Well done, good and faithful servant." Amen.